We're going to be starting just about 10, 15 seconds or so. We have people signing in from across the country and some folks from Canada. I want to welcome you, and other people from across around the world actually will be listening to our program today. I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Our topic today, Interview Techniques 3.0. My name is Dana Barocca of Lighthouse Consulting, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you just joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations. And if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly to our guest, Brad Remillard. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Again, in the lower right-hand corner, you can print these slides out for today. You'll see the print icon. Our special guest with us today is Brad Remillard. Brad's a very cool guy, a longtime friend and business colleague. And many of you know Brad. He's one of the top-rated Vistage speakers, and also is the author of one of the best-selling books on the topic of hiring. I call it the Bible of hiring. If you don't have it, I'd recommend getting it. It's on the screen. You're Not the Person I Hired. It's outstanding, and you should have it and use it for all levels and all processes for the hiring process. Brad has over 30 years of experience as an executive recruiter and is well-known from a national speaking standpoint, a trainer on the topic of hiring right the first time. Today, Brad will be sharing some of the techniques that he teaches in his workshops, CDs, and DVD training programs on how to raise the hiring bar by using specific methodology that Impact Hiring Solutions has developed. By taking a step-by-step approach, you'll be able to improve your hiring process that is measurable and has proven results. I feel privileged to have Brad with us today and to share ideas for dealing with today's hiring issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of this program and will be a little different from what we've done in the past. It's going to be our first panel discussion, and the topic will be, if you survive 2009, what's next? Brad, I want to welcome you and everybody for joining us today. Take it away.
Well, thanks, Dana, for that great introduction. Probably could have done better if I wrote it myself. And I thank you for that, and it is a pleasure to be here and talk with your panel and your guests. As Dana said, today we're going to focus on really just one aspect of the hiring process. And hiring has multiple steps to it. We have a five-step process that we call the success factor methodology. And those five steps include, first, defining the job properly, sourcing candidates properly and finding those passive candidates, interviewing candidates, the follow-up after the interview, the assessment process of the interview, and then some validation techniques like reference checking and background checking to validate what the candidate told you in the interview they actually did. And each of those steps are integrally linked. You can't pull one out without the other, but we're going to do that today a little bit as we focus on the one area of hiring that we're going to talk about today, interviewing, and that tends to be the topic that most hiring managers tend to go right to when they think about hiring. Just show me how to interview, and then we'll talk about that. And so I'm going to focus a lot on interviewing, but we're going to have to integrate some of those other steps into the process before we can really begin the process. Interviewing in and of itself has problems. The real fact is that for the most part, an interview is a very poor predictor of on-the-job performance.
Well, Brad, just one second before you continue. For those of you signing in now, I'm getting some questions of how to print the slides. And in the lower right-hand corner of the slide, you'll see a print icon. Just press it, you'll be able to print it out. Sorry, Brad.
That's okay. So interviewing is a very poor predictor of a hire or a performance once on the job. In fact, I like to tell people, and we have a saying and kind of our mantra in our company, Impact Hiring Solutions, you can literally sum up how to make a great hire literally in one sentence. If you want to make great hires, the key to making a great hire is you have to have a process, of which interviewing is one component of, a hiring process that puts the candidate in the job before you hire them. If you have a process that accomplishes that, you'll have a very high success rate. Now, you'll never get to 100% because we're dealing with people, but if you can get to an 80% hiring effective rate, you're hitting the ball out of the park. Most companies are low in somewhere in the 50 to 60% range. And one of the reasons is because they rely so much on interviewing. So why is hiring a very poor predictor? Well, some of the problems with interviewing, as we list on the screen, is number one, many hiring managers rely on what we call the first impression, and we're going to talk further about that. Companies tend to start the hiring process when they need somebody, or when their best people have walked out the door. Then it takes 2 to 3 months to hire somebody. By the time that 2 to 3 months go by, that hiring manager becomes desperate just to fill the job. So they move into what we call desperation hiring. And basically, it almost boils down to find me somebody who can fog the glass. Something is better than nothing. I've got nothing right now, so I'll take the best that comes along. We like to call that hiring from the cream of the crap. Embellishment and exaggeration. Embellishment and exaggeration. Think about it. If you ask yourself, I was to say to you right now, and you can just answer this in your own mind, what percentage of candidates embellish or exaggerate in the hiring process? Most of you probably thought 80 to 90%. And you're still low. It's about 125 to 140% because most candidates do it more than once. But I could flip that around and ask candidates and ask yourself, what percentage of hiring managers, when they're desperate, embellish or exaggerate in the hiring process? So basically what you've got is two people lying to each other to get the same job, and we wonder why when everybody's lying to each other in the interviewing, it doesn't work out. Because everybody's embellishing. We have to get rid of that. Most companies, the process is flawed. In fact, I would tell you most companies, they don't really have a hiring process. A structured, repeatable, with trained, competent people in the hiring process. It tends to be random. It tends to be unstructured. It tends to skip a lot of steps. And often, and more often than not, I could probably say, the people in the process aren't even competent. How many of you on this line that use other people in the interview? So most of us, if we're hiring, we interview, and then we ask other people in the interviewing process in our company, would you interview this candidate on a second or third interview? How many of you have audited whether those other people doing the interview that you're going to rely upon to make your hiring decision, how many of you have audited, not co-interviewed, but audited, whether those other people are even competent interviewers? Most of the time, that's about 15 to 20% of the people that have done that. So we don't even know if the other people in the hiring process are even doing a good job of interviewing or just talking about superficial issues, asking leading questions, not probing deeply, and making an emotional decision. Finally, a lot of the questions asked aren't relevant to the job performance. On our LinkedIn group, Impact Hiring Solutions LinkedIn group, I have a discussion going on right now. What are some of the dumbest questions you've been asked in the interview? I'm going to put this list together. Job questions aren't even relevant to job performance. And finally, one of the biggest reasons job processes fail, and the number one biggest hiring mistake companies make, is the job description being used has no relevancy to the actual job being performed. And therefore, the questions being asked aren't relevant to the job because the job description isn't relevant to the performance that the hiring manager wants. And these are just some of the reasons why interviewing is an extremely poor predictor of performance.
Brad, a question just came in. I think I can answer this for you. Will you be describing and discussing job descriptions in more depth? And the answer is yes.
Yeah, we're going to do that right now on the job screen right now, Dana.
Perfect.
Because it is the number one hiring mistake, and we believe that you can't even do the rest of the process. In our book, the one you mentioned, we have a kind of a bubble chart, and we show that the job description, what we call the success factor snapshot, is the hub of this wheel. If you don't have a good job description, you can't do good sourcing, you can't perform proper interviewing, you can't define the level, the pay, the competencies, performance management once they come on board, reference checking. Everything revolves around properly defining the job, and since we do a poor job of that, the whole hiring process is set up for failure right from the beginning. Let's look at this. If we look at the left side of your screen, now we've summarized this, but it's probably a pretty traditional job description. Most job descriptions that I've seen in 30 years, and I've seen thousands of these, tend to be focused around things like, say, we list the minimum years of experience we want the person to have. We list the minimum types of skills and knowledge that we want the person to have. We put together those behavioral attributes, the team player, the proactive, the multitasking, must be a multitasker, must be a global thinker, must be someone who is X, must be X. We talk about these behavioral traits. We list some minimum years of experience, 5 to 7, 8 to 10. We want some minimum kind of education, bachelor's degree, master's degree, maybe a PhD, maybe a high school degree, doesn't matter. Then we list out for them all the duties, the tasks and responsibilities, who it reports to, and some of the other kind of things, the travel, work weekends, and some of the things. That's a pretty traditional job description.
So it's more of a checklist is what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a box checking list, yeah. Easy to put together. A hiring manager can basically walk down to HR when somebody quits, pull the old one off, you know, blow it off, look at it, blow it off, look at it, say, yeah, that's what I need, put it back in HR and go back to work. But if you look at that, Dana, it's not a job description. It's a people description. 80% of most job descriptions define a person. Years of experience, industry experience, background, knowledge, behavior, education, certification. It's about a person, not a job description. And most of them define the minimum qualifications for the job. So before you even decide to start interviewing and looking for a person, you said basically to HR, to your hiring team, go out, find me the least qualified person and bring them to the table. Because when you define things in minimum standards, that's what's going to come to your doorstep.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, we have to change that. We've got to get away from this box-checking people description and really define what is it you want this person to do? What performance standards do you want this person to do? And there are two types of people in this world. There are employees. There are exempt and non-exempt. Basically, managers and non-managers. And there are two different types of job descriptions. I'm going to cover today the one on managers. We use the thing called success factors to do that. For non-managers, we use a thing called benchmarking, and because of time, we don't have time to go into that. Our book does and our webinars do, but we don't have time to do that today. Instead, let's define outcomes. Let's say I'm looking for a director of sales. By the way, this is an actual example of the true director of sales search that we did. When we met with the hiring manager, the president, he handed us the left side and says, I need all these kind of things. We step back and says, let's define outcomes. What do you really want this person to do over the next 12 to 18 months? After some extensive time, and that's why it takes a while to do this, that's why the left side is easy. It takes about 3.5 hours to put this together. But really what he wanted this director of sales to do was to increase sales by 20%, improve margin by 3% within the next 12 months. He wanted the new director of sales to open up an independent rep channel in Europe in 90 days. They wanted to implement a sales forecasting process and pipeline management in 4 months, and they wanted to revamp the sales collateral materials within the next 6 months. That defined outcomes. That defined what he wanted this person to do, not the activity. So here's the question for your group, Dana, for the members listening today. If the CEO had hired based upon the left-hand side of this job description, of this slide, what are the odds they would get the right-hand side? If they hired with the left-hand side, what are the odds they would get the right-hand side? The vast majority answered none. There's very little correlation between those two. But if you hire on the right-hand side and you interview, and we're going to talk about this, so remember some of these points. We're going to talk about these points, and I'm going to demonstrate how we take this in the interviewing process. But if we find a person that can deliver the results on the right-hand side, I'm going to suggest to you we automatically get the left-hand side. I don't know how many years' experience they need to do the right-hand side, but if they can do it, they've got enough. And I don't know if 5 years or 10 years.
A question just came in. Is it still important to have the left-hand side or just do the right-hand side?
That's a good point. Yes, it's still important to have the left-hand side. Because the left-hand side, although we tell people the left-hand side, Dana, is absolutely 100% worthless for hiring, it's still very important for legal reasons to have that job description.
I want to mention, everybody, that in the book that's on your screen, you're Not the Person I Hired, it goes into much more depth on this topic than we're able to cover today. Again, I really suggest getting that book if you don't have it.
Thank you. So it is important to have the left-hand side, and I was talking to a company today back in Rochester, New York, as a matter of fact, and I suggested to them, because they're kind of a regulated company, you have the left-hand side, but the right-hand side becomes the addendum. And the right-hand side, Dana, becomes your working document for hiring. And that's the difference between the two. So if we hire on the right-hand side, we will get the left-hand side. Because whatever that experience is, if they can do it, it's enough.
And
if we hire on the left-hand side, we don't necessarily get the right-hand side. Dana, go ahead.
I would also think that by having department heads or anybody that's doing hiring develop or work together on the right-hand side, the performance for that department or group should increase because it's setting goals and objectives. So it's helping them manage better, but it's also helping to train them on how to interview more appropriately. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I mean, the reality is, if you can break this, all we really did, Dana, is we took performance management, where performance management usually starts the day the person walks in the door, and say, okay, let's put together your goals and objectives together, and let's get them together. We just took performance management from the day they start and moved it forward into the hiring process. Because these are really the MBOs that you're going to hold this person accountable to. So in terms of putting the person in the job before you hire them, why not have the discussions before you hire them about these MBOs and how they would achieve them? Because you're going to have it the first day, why not do that before you hire and see if they can engage you with them? And as we get into interviewing, that's what we're going to talk about.
Brad, a question just came in. Let me just read it. I would assume that we need to create the left-hand side to put in to help, yet we interview based on the right-hand side. Is that a fair statement?
I don't know what you mean by the first part about help, but you're absolutely right. You interview on the right-hand side. I'm not sure what you mean about needing the left-hand side,
okay. But
I think maybe they mean by help screening resumes coming in. But the fact is, I would still suggest to you that you still want to screen on the right-hand side because the accomplishment you're looking for and what you're looking for on the resume isn't the left-hand side. You're looking for alignment on the resume with the right-hand side. Does their resume, the accomplishments and what they've done on their resume, does it align with what you need on the right-hand side? They may have the industry experience and the skills, and you can't tell behavior attitudes. They might have the minimum education, and they may have done the duties, tasks, and responsibilities. But if it doesn't align with what you need on the right-hand side, it's still a worthless resume. The person's not going to probably not going to be able to accomplish what you need done.
Okay. This is very powerful. This is, Brad, also another question came in. Can we go back for a sec?
Yeah.
On the success factor snapshot, question came in. What? How could somebody expect a candidate to respond to certain questions about the organization until they actually come on board?
Great question. Dana, can you ask me that when I get to the five core questions?
Will do.
Just hold that. If I don't, make sure you answer it. It's a great question. It's one we get all the time, and I'll go over that. I'm going to cover that when we get to the five core questions. If I don't cover it in depth, be sure and just ask it again, and I'll be glad to go more detail.
Okay, perfect.
But we're jumping ahead of ourselves a little bit because we're moving into the interview, and we're in step one. We've just defined what we want this person to do. Now let's go into the interview and see how we interview for that. So kind of remember some of these benchmarks, like the building the internet. What I'll do is, as we go forward, I'll use the build an independent rep channel in Europe in 90 days as an example about interviewing going forward. So let's talk a minute about some of the keys to interviewing. One of the key things about interviewing is, and hopefully you'll now step back and actually begin to audit some of your other peers doing the interviewing, or maybe some of your subordinates. Some of the things to look for is, or are, the key to a good interview is asking for examples. An interview is really a quest for the truth. You're trying to get to not put them under the microscope, not put them under an interrogation, but you really want to get to the truth of what did they really do? And did they really do it? And does that align with our culture, our company, our management style, our resources? Because if it doesn't, they may be a great person, but they're not the right person. And asking for examples really clearly accomplishes that. So it's a quest for the truth. You should train your people, and when you audit them, you should kind of have a knee-jerk reaction whenever a candidate makes a comment that you follow up with, well, can you give me an example of that? Can you give me a situation where that actually happened? You want that candidate to begin to draw you a picture of where it happened with an example, not some generic, high-level overview. That's how they hide things. And they don't necessarily, by the way, I'm going to defend a candidate. They don't necessarily do that intentionally, but candidates are taught and kind of trained to talk at high levels and not at specifics. Examples brings it down to specifics. It eliminates embellishment and exaggeration. And like you said, Dan, it teaches the candidate real time that, you know what, if you make a statement, you better have an example to back it up. And when we get that example, we want to probe a little deeply to understand the details of that example, because examples are where the proof is in the pudding. I can tell you, if you built a list on the left-hand side on a pro golfer, I would probably meet that qualifications. Qualification pro golfer. Has played golf for 30 years. Done it. Has great equipment. Done it. Has taken lessons. Done it. All those things are done. But the results is, what separates me from Tiger Woods, are the performance and the examples of where he's delivered the results that I can't deliver. And that's what's so important about examples. If you ask me, can you swing the club at 100 plus miles an hour? Yes. Now, spray it all over the golf course. The outcome is that, can you give me an example of where swinging the club at 100 miles an hour or more has won you a tournament? I kind of fall off the cliff here.
That's a phenomenal question.
Yeah, I fall off the cliff. Yeah, I can swing the club. I can, same with baseball. Sports is always done on performance. We gauge a great professional based on their performance, not whether a baseball player can throw a pitch at 90 miles an hour, but can he throw a pitch and get it over the plate? It's performance. And we got to do the same thing with examples in the interviewing process. One of the best ways of leveraging your time, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this on an interview, is if you're not, I would always recommend conducting an interview, a phone interview, before you waste your time bringing a person in. I'm going to give you a couple of questions to ask on a phone interview that will save you an enormous amount of time. And we have available on our website templates for a 20-minute phone interview. But I would encourage you to always ask a phone interview. It increases the accuracy. It eliminates some of the problems we talked about when we talked about a minute first impression. It's a microcosm of a big interview. You should have two or three just key core questions you want to ask because it's a screen. You can eliminate about 80% of the people that you bring in that you waste your time with and you've sat back and said, oh, my God, how quick can I get this person out of the office? I got work to get done. I don't want to spend an hour and a half with this person. I got a spreadsheet to complete. Why did I bring this person in? You can eliminate that with about a 20-minute phone interview and save an enormous amount of time. And many times, in 10 minutes in the phone interview, you know you don't have the candidate. So I would encourage you, if you're not, to think about doing a phone interview, and I'm going to give you some questions to ask on a phone interview, and we have that template available if you'd like. But it also prepares the candidate for that face-to-face interview, because from the phone interview, if they're top talent, they should know, gee, this person's going to ask me for a lot of examples, and I better be prepared when I walk in the door.
Brad, isn't it also respectful to do a phone interview so the candidate doesn't have to go running all over town and spend gas and time and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from a candidate perspective, I would think that a candidate would respect that, particularly if you have weather back east right now. There can be nothing worse than a candidate walking out thinking the same thing. And, oh, my God, this wasn't the right job. It wasn't, you know, I'm just not right for it, and I just spent, you know, snow and traffic. So, absolutely, it helps the candidate do an assessment to make sure that the job's correct also.
Okay. And I would imagine after the phone interview that if they get another phone call, having them come in for the interview, they must feel pretty good about it. They won the lottery, in a sense.
Yeah. I don't think they won the lottery, but it's certainly the beginning process. At least they've got past it. Now, when you get it face-to-face, because you're going to do a much more in-depth interview, they still may not be qualified, but at least coming in the door, you have to ask yourself, well, wait a second. I did this phone interview. They must have something I liked about them, so you should be able to step back now and begin to do a relatively thorough interview because you did have a phone interview and you did at least see something in that phone interview that encouraged you to bring them in.
A question just came in also on phone interviewing before we get to the next slide. Do you recommend at the end of the phone interview, if you like the candidate, to set up a meeting or to put a little breathing space in there and call them back?
Yeah, I would leave it on a positive note depending on what you want to do. If you have some more candidates legitimate, but you like the candidate, you could say, you know, I think your background is good, and I've got a few more candidates to interview, and then from that we're going to invite people back, so I can't make a commitment to you like right now, but I will let you know that for the first round, you know, your background may be a fit, but I have a few more people to do, and we'll get back to you.
Okay.
Or if you positively, absolutely going to bring the person in, you could say, look, you know, I'd like to bring you for the next step. I'll have my assistant, HR, or we'll give you a call back tomorrow and we'll set up a time.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about on average, an hour to an hour and a half interview, what that anatomy or structure might be like. You know, every candidate's nervous walking in the door. I don't care how good they are, there's some degree of nervousness there. Even if you don't want the job, there's some degree of nervousness because you want to do well, and the candidate wants to be able to say, I don't want the job, but I want them to want me. So we suggest the first 5 minutes should be some kind of setup and rapport building. And it may even be 10 minutes. Setup, you have those, you know, you set up the interview, you explain, I don't have time to go into it, it's in our book. You explain to them the interviewing process, you explain to them what type of interview you're going to have, you kind of get them comfortable with what's going to be happening in the interview so they know what to expect. You spend some time talking about the job. You build you start marketing the job. You build excitement around the job so they begin to get excited about the job. But that should be 5 or 10 minutes. The next 10 minutes or so, you should review their work history. This is what I call the informational gathering. If you realize there are only three types of questions asked in an interview, that's it. There's only three types, three categories. One, we have the throwaway questions, which are just that tell me about yourself. What kind of animal would you want to be if you were running around in the forest? These throwaway questions. We have informational questions, which are important. Size of companies, people you've been, you know, size, what is your product if you're in sales? what was your, how big a team did you have? What functional areas did you manage? Where we gather information to see how well it aligns. And that's what this work history is about. You kind of gather information. Why did you leave the companies? Those kind of things. So this may take 10, 15 minutes as you go through the background, understanding the company, the size of the organization, what their scope and span of responsibilities, the duties and tasks that they were responsible for, to see how it aligns with your company, the types of systems they were on, those types of questions. The third category are what I determine are called pain. So you have throwaway, informational, and pain. In our opinion, most important and the critical one are the pain questions. Those are the questions of how they're going to solve your pain. What pain do you have over the next year that you want to make sure they accomplish? Those are those success factors. Those are those, open up that independent rep channel, increase sales by 20%, you know, develop a sales forecasting process. And that's those five core questions we're going to talk about in a minute. This is getting where the meat of the interview is. This could be 40 minutes to an hour just talking about these five core questions. And you can do a great interview. You can get to 80% of what you need to determine by just asking these five core questions. Because if they can't deliver these five core questions, then I would tell you all the other questions are irrelevant. If they can't do the first five, you don't need to ask any more questions. Well, I'm going to back up a minute. If they can't do the first four, you don't need to ask any more questions. They can't do your job. They're not top performers, and you shouldn't hire them anyway. All the other questions that you'd ask after that, irrelevant. Spend some time on personality, culture fit, because that's the fifth question, and how would they do your job? And then finally, another 10 or 15 minutes of closing and building demand. And I'm going to take a sidestep here. I'm going to break with the normal interviewing, and I'm going to just give some PR here, because remember, an interview is a PR event. You want that candidate to walk out of your office, whether you're going to hire him or not, whether you hated that candidate or not, whether you thought, why did I bring this person in, or you're going to hire the candidate. You want that candidate walking out of your office wanting to go to work for you and thinking, what a great company this is. The last thing you want is that candidate sitting at a trade show next to somebody, and they're chit-chatting away while they're having lunch or dinner at this trade show or professional networking group, and the person next to them says, oh, I've got a job interview at ABC company. I'm going to meet with Brad Remillard. And that candidate's saying, oh, I met with Brad Remillard just last week on that same job. What a jerk that person is. I would never go to work for ABC company. You can have that job. It's a PR event. You want them to say, oh, God, I met with Brad Remillard last week, too. What a great company. What a great job. I wish I would have got that job. It's a PR event. Leave those candidates wanting a job. How you treat that candidate from the time you pick them up at the in the lobby to the time they leave, you should treat that candidate the same way you would treat a customer if they walked in your door. You want them walking out bragging about your company to their friends, their colleagues, and particularly if you're in a niche market, you want them spreading goodwill, not bad will. So that's my tangent.
Really good point.
So kind of back to the interviewing structure, that's kind of the interviewing anatomy of how an interview should go and the time frames if you're going to conduct a thorough, in-depth probing interview. You notice you can't do an interview in 15 minutes. I get this all the time. Well, just have the candidate come back. They'll spend about 15 minutes with the salesperson, maybe 10 minutes with this person, and 2 minutes with this person. Why? Why? Anybody on this phone, is there anybody on this phone that really believes that they could present themselves in such a way and get their background out in 10 minutes to determine whether you should be hired or not? What is that person in 10 minutes? What do you want from that person? Yeah, I like them. We'll go out and have a beer together. You can't do anything. It's a worthless interview, and in my opinion, a waste of time to have a 10-minute interview with anybody. Because all you're going to get is, yeah, I like them. You know what? We went to the same school together, and I liked them. Liking a candidate is not a reason to hire a candidate.
Hey, Brad, we're getting a couple of people that are asking for you just to recap quickly the five core questions.
I can't recap them because I haven't covered them yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm going to get to that in the next one more slide.
Okay, there we go.
So, a couple of things that happened before the interview that we talked about. Before the interview begins, I want you to recognize the most powerful things. If you walk away with nothing else today, this is the most important thing I can tell you. You have to fight against the first impression. The first impression drives the interviewing process. You have to train yourself and train all of your people in the interview that regardless of whether you make a great first impression or the candidate makes a poor first impression, you have to say to yourself, gee, I brought this person in from a phone interview. I'm going to take that first impression, good or bad, set it aside in the parking lot, and at the end of the interview, I'm going to decide whether that first impression is still valid, whether it enhances or detracts from the interview. I've had over 10,000 interviews in my life, and I still make first impressions. But I still set them aside, and regardless of good or bad, I remain objective. And I can promise you this, if you can get your team to get over the first impression and set it aside, interviewing will go up dramatically in your organization. The second thing to recognize is you need to have what we call a success-based interview. Train your group to ask for those examples and ask the five core questions in the interview. So let me go through those five core questions. We believe with just these five core questions you can ask because they're based on the traits of success. The traits of success that we look for with top talent is top talent all have high initiative. Top talent, they're self-motivated. Top talent execute. They get the job done. They don't whine. They don't complain. They take the resources they've got, and they charge forward, and they get the job done. Because we're talking about managers, they all have the ability to leverage others through great leadership. Those are some of those behavioral traits. And then the last two tend to do with the job. They all have past successes, similar size and scope and environment. And finally, the most important, that fifth question, which I want you to ask me, we'll get in a minute, Dana, from that one question, is they can adapt their past experiences to your company, your culture, your environment, and who you are. If they can't do the fifth step, they may be a great candidate. They're not the right candidate. So with that, let me give you these five core questions all around these five predictors of success. Here they go. Question number one. This is one of the best questions, by the way, of the two questions you should ask. This is the best question you can ever ask on a phone interview. Can you give me an example where you demonstrated, and I like to add in the words there, you can make the change yourself. I like to add the words where you demonstrated high initiative. I can tell you right now, if they haven't demonstrated high initiative or just initiative, you want them? But they come back with an example that you look at and you think that's high initiative or you think that's initiative? And on our company, we think that's just normal. We think that's just part of the job. And you think that's high initiative? They're probably not going to be successful in your company. Why ask a bunch of other questions? Initiative gets the speed of organization. They may think that's high, this is culture. They may think that's high initiative. You may think in your organization, we don't even think you're standing still if you think that's high initiative. It gets the cultural fit. One of the best questions to ask on a phone interview. The next question. Can you give me an example of you executed a project flawlessly? Now, you can ask flawlessly or not. That's up to you. This is where we want to get to execution. And I generally will follow up and say, can you give me an example where you executed a project flawlessly? And I might expound a little bit. I say, what I'm really looking for is I want a project where you were under the gun, short time frame, short budget, lack of resources, but regardless, you got that job done. You executed and you got that job done. The results may not have been great, and I'm not talking about results. This is about getting the job done. You may have trampled on people. I'm not talking about leadership. We'll talk about that next. I'm talking about getting the job done. We can decide later if that's good or bad. But I want to hear how you execute it. The next question decides whether or not they led, they managed, or they trampled on people. Can you share with me your most significant success leading a cross-functional team on a major project? Cross-functional is important because now we're talking about responsibility without authority. If Dana's working 60 hours a week, and for me to get my project completed, I need information from Dana, and I don't have the authority. It's easy if I have the authority, but if I don't have the authority, if I got the responsibility to get the project done, I need to be a good leader to get Dana to be willing to come in another 5 hours after he's already working six to get that done. That's why cross-functional is so important. Now we're getting to leadership. Now I want to know, did you trample on people? Did you have to beat people up, or could you really be a leader? Now, these tend to be those behavioral traits. The next two really deal with putting the candidate in the job before you hire them. So let's go back to our success factor snapshot. Let's just take the independent sales rep. One of the success factors on the right side was build an open independent rep channel in Europe in the next 90 days. I might now ask that candidate, can you give me an example of where you have developed an independent rep channel in your background? Now we are talking in the interview about my job. We aren't talking about some extraneous thing, and I'm going to ask them about an example, and in a minute I'll show you how to probe. But I'm beginning to align his experiences with the performance that I want. I don't care if he had international experience if he can't open up an independent rep channel. So now that he's given me an example where he's opened up rep channels or opened up international experience, the fifth question is really where I put him in the job. Now we're going to have a job, and it might go like this. So let's say I interview Dana, and I ask Dana the first four questions. And Dana hits him out of the ballpark. I say to Dana, great, I'd like you to come back and meet with my staff next week. Dana comes back next week, meets with my VP of HR, my VP of marketing, my VP of operations, and my COO. Knowing that I've talked to Dan about opening an independent rep channel in Europe, I would think he would talk to some of the other people about the challenges facing opening up a rep channel, my operations person, about inventory, my marketing person, what kind of marketing support are we going to get, my HR person, about organizational structure, because that's going to be one of his tasks. And over that week, Dana should be taking the time to research my company. There's lots of ways to research a company. I don't have time to go into them all. And he should be asking those other four people about my company and how to accomplish that. So after Dana's met with all those people, I meet with him one more time. This time, I'm going to put Dana in the job. I'm going to say to Dana, you remember when we met the first time? We talked about your need to open up an independent rep channel in Europe. Well, Dana, now that you've had 2 weeks to research the industry, research my company, talk to my team. Dana, let me ask you, when you come on board, what would be your game plan to open up an independent rep channel in Europe in my company and in 90 days? Now what are we doing? Aren't we really having the exact same conversation now that I'm going to have with Dana the day he walks in the door, the first day, and I say, Dana, let's talk about getting this independent rep channel opened up? Rather than Dana sit back and say, huh? When you said international experience, I thought you meant traveling internationally, foreign currency, dealing with a direct sales firm. I've never opened up an independent rep channel. I haven't a clue how to do that. That's a little late. Let's bring that in here, and I can have that exact same conversation with me now. To answer your question, Dana, it goes two ways. About the question, how am I supposed to know about my company before we have,
right.
We know about my company. Wasn't that the question?
Yep, that's the question.
I have two answers for that. Number one, they've had 2 weeks to research the company. They've had 2 weeks or more, and they had a chance to interview my staff. So they've had an opportunity to do that. But let's say they don't do that. Let's say they didn't do that. That's great. Here's my answer. I would look that candidate in the eyes and I would say, you know, Dana, fair question. Maybe you haven't had a chance to learn enough about my company. Dana, we have an hour and a half set aside for this interview. What do you need to know from me to answer that question? And in fact, Dana, if I don't know the answer, I'll bring in my HR person, my marketing person, my operation person, and I'll make sure they answer those questions. So, Dana, go ahead. Fire away. What information do you need to know from me to answer that question? And in fact, I'm going to go through this real quick. I don't have a lot of time. In fact, that is exactly what happened, Dana, in this real-life example. Mm-hmm. And the candidate came back with great questions. The candidate came back and said, okay, well, tell me. What country you want to do this in? What's your budget to do this in? What products are moving out? He started asking great questions about how to open up this independent rep channel, and I will tell you that that 90 days changed from 90 days to 2 years because we had that conversation before we hired the candidate. It's a great question, but don't let them off the hook. Put the burden back on them to find out what they need to know to answer that question. Don't let them escape. Does that make sense?
That's very, very powerful. Thank you. That's good.
So once you've asked those five core questions, that's just the start of the interview. We believe the next most important part is what we call, now you need to put them under the magnifying glass, and we call this the magnifying glass approach. It's time for them to paint a picture. I like to use the analogy, I don't think they exist anymore, maybe they do, but when I was growing up, we had these jigsaw puzzles, 500-piece jigsaw puzzle. Well, the candidate's responsibility is to begin to put the pieces of that jigsaw puzzle together to paint you this picture of what they did. Your job is where there's holes and they're looking for those pieces, there's holes in that jigsaw puzzle, to ask the questions to fill that in by putting them under the magnifying glass. And I would suggest to you, you can do a thorough, in-depth, probing interview with those five core questions and six simple words. Once they've asked the question, you've asked those five core questions, or they've given you an example, either way, they've given you an example, you can probe deeply with six simple words. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. All you have to do is to begin to ask probing questions, starting with one of those words. Who was on the team? What was the budget for that project? Why did you select A over B? What were the two biggest challenges you encountered, and how did you overcome them? What would you do different today that you learned from that experience? When Mary and Bill didn't agree on the objective, how did you overcome that conflict? Why did you select vendor B over vendor A? I can continue to ask those questions and probe deep enough until I'm confident that this candidate really did do what they said they did. And I can tell you from personal experience that the candidate will implode right in front of you if they're making this stuff up. You can ask for details. Don't accept vague terms. Ask for size, scope, complexity, effort, team. Ask for dates. Don't accept, it took 3 months. No, from when to when. If it's a major accomplishment, you know about the date that you did that. I hate it. Percentages. I don't accept percentages. When I see a salesperson tell me increased sales by 64% last year, I first ask them, when last year? Was it the whole year? Was it a quarter? Was it a specific day because the year before there were no sales and therefore that one day you increased sales by 64%? And then I ask them, what two numbers did you divide to get 64%? What were sales in the beginning and what were in the end? Percent is a vague term. Probe deeply. And finally, train your people that if you hear the word we, every book, every career coach, every outplacement firm, every recruiter, trains their candidates to use the word we did this, well, we were involved in this, well, we were doing this, and well, it was we. Because if they don't use the word we, hiring managers think they have an ego, they're not a team player, they don't get along with others. So if they use the word I, that's what they think. You're not, unless anybody on this line is hiring we, you don't care about that. You want them to talk about what they did. So train your people that if you hear the word we a lot, stop the person and ask them, who is we? I hear you using we a lot. Is that you? Is that a team? And I'd like you to use the word I when you did something. And look for balance. That's what makes a team player. Every team has a head. As a leader, that has to be the I. But is there balance between the I and the we? If you do those few things, number one, set your first impressions aside. Number two, well, let me back up a minute. I'm going to back up even more. Number one, if you define success in outcomes, number two, conduct a phone interview ahead of time. Number three, set your first impressions aside. Walk away with nothing more today. Train you and your team to set those first impressions aside until the interview is completed, and then revisit it, change interviewing overnight. Number four, train yourself. Anytime you hear a statement, train yourself to have a knee-jerk reaction to ask for examples. Ask the five core questions. Conduct a phone interview. Use two questions on the phone interview. Use the initiative question, and then take one of your success factors and ask for similar experience. So on a phone interview, in my example, I'd ask the initiative question of my salespeople, and then I might ask the question, can you give me an example of where you've opened up an independent rep channel? If they haven't done those two things and they don't align, I can save my time bringing them in. Number six, probe deeply with who, what, when, where, why, how. And number seven, take we off the table. If you can get your team to do those seven things, interviewing will change and improve dramatically in a very short period of time.
Phenomenal, Brad. I want to go to the next slide. In just a few minutes after we conclude this show and turn off the recording, we'll be opening up the line so you'll have an opportunity to actually talk to Brad live. You'll see on your screen an area to register for our upcoming January 26th Open Line program, which will be a panel discussion entitled, If You Survived 2009, What's Next? Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and a PowerPoint for today's program. So please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. As a reminder, the book that Brad has written, You're Not the Person I Hired, I consider that the Bible of hiring. So I would really encourage everyone to get that. A couple questions before we close this and open the lineup. Will Brad provide us with the phone interview template? Brad, why don't you explain where they can find that?
Well, let me go through that. Number one, you can get our book from our website at a discount. So our website is impacthiringsolutions.com. Go to the top where it says products, highlight hiring managers, and you'll see a book right there, and you can get our book cheaper than you can get it on Amazon. The phone interviewing templates, they're not free. They're you get 25 for $19. So I didn't mean to imply that they were free, but they are available.
Okay, great. Brad, and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that you've shared. Again, we're going to open the lineup in just a minute. If you'd like to contact Brad to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together or discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see Brad's contact information on your screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track open line program. Have a great day.
Dana, let me just say one thing before they leave. I do want to make – I forgot about it. It just dawned on me when you were talking. We do on our homepage, if you go to our homepage at impacthiringsolutions.com and you scroll to the bottom where it says what's new, we offer a couple of free tools for hiring managers. We have a what we call an 8-matrix hiring assessment scorecard, so they can download this for free, and they can actually go through these 8 criteria and determine how effective is your hiring process. We have available our cultural assessment, so you can one of the biggest reasons people fail is they don't all agree on the culture, so you can take our cultural assessment, have everybody in your company take it, and see if everybody agrees on what your culture is, and does it align together. So those are some free tools that hiring managers can download to assess their hiring process and their culture. And they're free on our website at the homepage, scroll to the bottom, what's new section.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you, Brad. Let me. I'm going to stop the recording equipment, and we're going to open the line up. So we'll be back in just about 10 seconds. Please hold the line, everyone.